I wanted to be invisible. I just wanted to be left alone. I didn't want to bring any attention on myself because I felt so relieved and so safe inside the U.S. that I was afraid that I would lose that security if the INS found out that I did not have legal status to be here.
The book is kind of a novel and a humor book and a movie critique book all rolled into one. It's about a group of friends who watch movies together.
Boys, you would know better than I, but aren't there a lot of carbohydrates on that table for supposedly gay people?
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Silent students sound off against bigotry, the war on terror targets a gay Pakistani DJ, and a queer jack-of-all-trades invites you to his screening party. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 12, 2003. High school and college students across the U.S. and beyond this week observed the 7th annual National Day of Silence to raise awareness of harassment and discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender students. Observances on some 2,000 campuses were believed to involve a total of more than 200,000 students, making this year's the biggest yet. Participants vowed to remain silent for 9 hours, including the school day, making their point by distributing cards with statistics on campus homophobia that read, "My deliberate silence echoes that silence which is caused by harassment, prejudice, and discrimination. I believe that ending the silence is the first step towards fighting these injustices. Think about the voices you are not hearing today. What are you going to do to end the silence?" Many campuses also held rallies, marches, and educational events, with some making the day part of annual pride celebrations.
Conservative protests by parents and students were also stepped up. One California school district told teachers that students observing the day of silence must respond if called on in class, and an Alabama principal prohibited students from passing out the cards based on a rule against distributing political, religious, or issue-driven literature on campus. And sadly, a 16-year-old girl in Concord, Massachusetts, was found beaten unconscious near her home the day after she participated in a Day of Silence assembly and was harassed with homophobic epithets for doing so.
Day of Silence activities were widely covered by media. Proclamations of the day were issued by politicians, including California Governor Gray Davis, Connecticut Governor John Rowland, and Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm.
A panel of the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled unanimously this week that public school administrators can be held liable if they fail to act effectively against homophobic harassment of students. Although the case in question involved a California school district, the appellate court's findings also apply in 8 other Western states. 1 male and 5 female students alleged that they experienced severe harassment and some violence over a 7-year period in the 1990s at a junior high school and a high school in the Northern California town of Morgan Hill. When they notified school officials, they were brushed off, except in the case of a gang bashing for which only one assailant was punished. The school district argued that its anti-discrimination policy should shield it from lawsuits. But the 3 judges said that officials could be held liable for having failed to effectively enforce it, thereby violating the student's constitutional right to equal treatment under the law. This means the student's lawsuit against the school district can proceed in federal court.
The El Paso, Texas City Council voted unanimously this week to add both sexual orientation and gender identity to the categories protected by the city's civil rights ordinance. The ordinance prohibits discrimination within the city limits in any of the accommodations, advantages, facilities, or services offered to the general public, whether by individuals, associations, or corporations.
In a still bigger U.S. advance against discrimination, New Mexico's Governor Bill Richardson this week signed into law both a civil rights bill and a hate crimes bill that include both gender identity and sexual orientation. The civil rights bill prohibits discrimination in employment, housing, credit, public accommodations, and union membership. It makes New Mexico only the 14th of the 50 U.S. states to protect gays and lesbians from discrimination, and only the third to protect transgenders. The hate crimes bill makes New Mexico the 28th state to increase penalties for crimes motivated by homophobia and the 6th to do so for bias based on gender identity. Both new laws go into effect on July 1st. At the signing ceremony, before a cheering, weeping crowd of activists who had lobbied long and hard for the new laws, Richardson announced he was also doing by executive order something he was unable to find support for in the legislature.
I am today signing an executive order that will require state government to provide domestic partners of state employees the benefits now reserved and available only for spouse partners. By signing this order, domestic partners will now have access to affordable health care. This is, by the way, a promise that I made and that you didn't ask me to keep.
In a first for Costa Rica, late last month, a government agency granted a trans woman provisional custody of a child, the first step towards legal adoption. The trans woman, known as Mairena, has cared for the 9-year-old boy since he was a baby, and as Pani, the National Infancy Patronage, wrote, provided him food, care, upbringing, education, assistance, recreation, health, clothing, lodging, love, and attended to his other needs that today are considered as rights, fulfilling the role of a good parent. The Costa Rican lesbian and gay group, CPAC DDHH, views the Pani ruling as an expansion of the definition of family that will advance legal recognition of same-gender couples.
Britain's highest court, the Law Lords, this week rejected a trans woman's bid for legal recognition of her 22-year marriage to a man. Elizabeth Bellinger was married to her husband Michael by a registrar who didn't question her gender, but two lower courts had previously declared the marriage invalid. Like those courts, the Law Lords expressed great sympathy towards Bellinger, and one declared that the couple deserves our respect and admiration. But they ruled that current British law neither recognizes sex change nor allows for any but heterosexual marriage, and said it is up to the Parliament rather than the courts to change that. Bellinger is expected to appeal to the European courts, which have already found that Britain's treatment of transsexuals violates the European Convention, something the Law Lords acknowledged. Britain's government has been drafting new legislation on transsexuals for some time, but it's not known when that will be introduced.
The European Parliament this week adopted a non-binding resolution calling on European Union member states to broaden the terms of family reunification. Included in the expansion are unmarried partners and registered partners, if the host nation already extends legal recognition to such couples. The resolution applies to individuals who are residents in, but not citizens of, an EU member nation, allowing them to bring family members to join them in the EU.
The European Parliament this week also adopted a resolution calling on Egypt to end its persecution of gay men. The resolution specifically calls for an immediate end to all criminal prosecutions based on homosexuality, which in the last 2 years have already resulted in dozens of convictions and possibly hundreds of detentions. The resolution also reminds Egypt of a treaty obligation to protect human rights and calls on Egypt to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation.
Arguments were heard this week in Australia's highest court as two gay men seek asylum from persecution in their native Bangladesh. Both Australia's Refugee Review Tribunal and the Federal Court of Australia have previously denied their application, despite the men's claims of having been stoned, whipped, and ordered killed in a fatwa from their local Islamic council once their sexual orientation had become known. A spokesperson for Australia's immigration ministry told reporters that homosexuality is, in the government's view, not a valid reason for seeking asylum under the UN Convention on Refugees. With this case, the nation's High Court will take up that question for the first time.
And finally, the prestigious Pulitzer Prizes were awarded this week, including a couple of surprises. Cuban-born Florida playwright Nilo Cruz, who's openly gay according to the venerable gay and lesbian magazine The Advocate, became the first Latino ever to win the Pulitzer for drama. His play, Anna and the Tropics, was only the second ever to win that honor without having been staged in New York City, although the prize makes it a certainty that it will be soon. And few expected that Cruz's work would beat out the other two drama finalists, Richard Greenberg's gay-themed baseball comedy Take Me Out, a success in both New York and London, and legendary gay three-time Pulitzer winner Edward Albee's gay-themed The Goat, or Who is Sylvia?
Still more surprising was the fiction selection Middlesex, the first time a Pulitzer has gone to a work centered on an intersexed person. The author, Detroit-born Berlin resident Jeffrey Eugenides, is not intersexed himself, but much of the story is told in the first person, by a Greek-American with a rare gene that creates a female appearance at birth, but male characteristics at puberty. The forebearers who carried the gene to the narrator's conception are also followed back 80 years and more, making a sprawling epic. Eugenides told Deutsche Welle that, "What I do is take something that might sound freaky at first and make it very normal. I think that if you read Middlesex, the idea of hermaphrodites will become much closer to your own experience. It's really symbolic of the changes we all go through at puberty and the sexual confusion that we all have at adolescence." Or, as Eugenides' fan, novelist Jay McInerney, told London's Observer, "Middlesex is the great Greek-American hermaphrodite epic that we didn't realize we needed until we read it."
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 12, 2003. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Dean Elzinger.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
He's a popular columnist, best-selling novelist, Glamour-nominated musician, and a filmmaker on the brink. Our Steve Pride profiles queer Renaissance man Dennis Hensley later in the program. As part of America's so-called war on terror, thousands of immigrants from countries in the Middle East have been detained and forced into deportation proceedings, even after living peacefully in the U.S. for many years. One of them is 34-year-old Keshav Jonani, an openly gay man who was born in Karachi, Pakistan, but now lives in San Francisco, where he's helped build the local psy trance music scene as a popular DJ. For years, Jonani carefully flew under the radar of the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service because he feared returning home to a country where gays and lesbians are often persecuted. But now he has no choice. An immigration court will decide his fate this July. With production assistance from Paul Jaffe, This Way Out's Brian Goble reports from San Francisco.
For me, music knows no boundaries. Music creates a passion for life. Music knows no hatred. Music is the highest power that brings self-realization for God, and God sees no difference amongst its children.
Keshav Jonani is known to his friends and fans as KJ. A San Francisco DJ who is known internationally, KJ helped popularize a type of electronic music known as trance.
I started DJing in like around 1990, and it's been like 13 years. No one in America at that time was playing that style of music as I was. And at that time, it was only called techno music because it was technological music. And the term trance hadn't been tagged onto it. It was just called techno music. Trance dance music has been something that has been going on for centuries. Since like the African people start banging on their drums, for like when you do in the Sufi religion, when we have the whirling dervishes. And India also, they have like trance dance movement where people get into like hypnotic altered states. When I started realizing that this music is creating the same effect as it would have done for those people if I was living in those times, then this is the modern representation of the tradition that has been carried on for centuries, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and has finally made its way into the 21st century with the use of technology. I feel like music and love go hand in hand together, and that's all that I've ever tried to propagate.
When KJ first arrived in America in 1986 as a gay man from a predominantly Muslim country, he discovered a kind of acceptance he could never find in Pakistan. His life there is something that only provokes bad memories.
I had to live with two distinguishable differences. One, I was a Hindu. Two, that I was gay. Being Hindu and growing up in Pakistan was a very challenging situation because to most public, I would have to hide my name and not mention that I'm Hindu just in case they get themselves into some religious fervor about the whole situation. Being Hindu in Pakistan was different also because of the riots that used to happen. I didn't understand when I was a young child, why are there people like rioting outside our home and why is our lives in danger just because we are Hindu.
KJ knew he was gay at a very young age, and like being a Hindu, it was something he tried to keep a secret.
I knew that I was different, but I knew that that was so unacceptable in Pakistan because according to Pakistani law, I could be stoned to death, a brick wall could be pushed on myself, or I could be imprisoned. They could put me under like public lashings. I knew that if the word had ever gotten out that I would be blackmailed, my family could be ridiculed. So all that was pretty scary.
KJ also suffered years of sexual abuse. He was outed in school, and eventually, he was blackmailed. His mother found out he was gay by one day walking in on KJ and his abuser. He remained suicidal for some time.
At what point did it all come to a head when you said to yourself that you want to leave?
I didn't have any idea that I had to leave. The only way that I knew that a part of me wanted to leave the country was when I actually started doing research on homosexuality. I went to the library and they had a book on homosexuality, like a chapter on it, and I started to kind of like read about it. And then I knew that there were other countries in the world where that was a little bit more accepted. There were people who had same sex. All that seemed like a fantasy story of a world that I would never know. But that's not how my story turned out.
KJ's sister married an American Marine who was stationed in Pakistan, and they moved to the United States. She was like a mother figure to him, and soon he would follow her to California on a student visa. He arrived in Orange County when he was 17 years old.
Well, it was an answer to my prayers. I was glad that I had left Pakistan. I didn't know that I was going to stay in America for 17 years. I didn't know what was going to be my fate. I knew that I didn't have to live my life in fear anymore. But I didn't realize until just recently that that fear that I lived under in Pakistan had taken a toll on me and that it had shaped me into who I am today.
KJ's immigration problems began in 1989 after a failed attempt at marriage.
My mom, she was coming to America, and suddenly all those years of all those repressed feeling and my newfound sense of freedom that I was experiencing of like being gay, all came to a halt. I had already told my mother that I was reformed. I was straight again. I'm not gay. I pressured myself to thinking that I could actually live a straight life, and I had gotten married. And I think getting married to her was the stupidest decision that I'd ever made. But since she left me, I felt that I should abandon my immigration application because I didn't qualify for immigration status because my U.S. citizen spouse had left me. So for the next several years, I wanted to be invisible. I just wanted to be left alone. I didn't want to bring any attention on myself because I felt so relieved and so safe inside the U.S. that I was afraid that I would lose that security if the INS found out that I did not have legal status to be here.
After several years of keeping a low profile and avoiding his immigration status, KJ finally decided to confront it.
I really wanted to be here, and I didn't want to choose Pakistan as my reality. I just wanted to be here in, like, America, and I did try for the lottery that they had. I was informed about political asylum, and I was advised and suggested that I should pursue this route for my citizenship.
But shortly after applying for asylum, an option available to immigrants who face persecution at home, came America's so-called War on Terror. Now, in the interest of Homeland Security, KJ and many other immigrants are facing the prospect of deportation.
So I went ahead with special registration. So I was taken to a room. One guy was sitting inside the room and he interviewed me. Then he made me sit back outside for like a while until they had made a decision. But when he came back, I said, okay, well, you can go, Mr. Jivnani, but you have to sign this piece of paper. It was for my deportation proceedings. He knew that I had already filed for political asylum. I was told that if my political asylum goes through, then that paper, I could have that voided at that point. When I went for my political asylum meeting, they referred the case to the immigration court.
KJ's hearing is set for this July, when he could be deported back to Pakistan, a country he escaped 17 years ago.
I just want to know where is my home, and I hope San Francisco is my home. And I feel like a lot of love, a lot of accepted. I have friends, I have a community over here, I have my cat, and hopefully I'll be able to live in this country.
For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goble in San Francisco.
I'm Amanda Burst, Marcy Darcy from Married with Children, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. Stay tuned.
Hallelujah. Who is Dennis Hensley? Is he a queer columnist, novelist, musician, filmmaker? According to This Way Out's Steve Pride, the answer is yes.
Dennis Hensley is a Renaissance man. And not in that creepy, dressing up as Edward II and hanging out at the medieval fair on the edge of town sort of way. Dennis is that rarer breed, an everyman who seems to be everywhere, doing everything. A regular contributor to Movie Line, Detour, Cosmopolitan, TV Guide, Us, and The Advocate, in 1998, Hensley's first novel, Misadventures in the 213, landed him on the LA Times bestseller list. Now he's back with Screening Party, a new novel from Allison Publications, which has been nominated for a Lambda Book Award and turned into an audiobook starring Kathy Griffin and, of course, Dennis Hensley.
The book is kind of a novel and a humor book and a movie critique book all rolled into one. It's about a group of friends who watch movies together, and each chapter is a different movie. And the story that sort of follows through the novel is about how these movies and the ritual of getting together to sort of watch them and make fun of them and examine them starts to really mean a lot to the characters in the book. I was writing for a magazine called British Premier. This was in the late 90s, and my editor there wanted me to write a story about Jaws for its anniversary. I think it was like its 20th or 25th anniversary, and I had never seen it. So I said, why don't I invite my friends over and watch it for the first time and write about that experience? And he said, sure, let's try it. And it turned out to be pretty funny and entertaining and interesting, and so we expanded on that, and then I took a few of those columns. There weren't that many. I maybe did 10 of them, and I took those and expanded them and turned it into a novel as well as this sort of movie book.
How exactly did you go about choosing the movies?
A number of them were assigned by the magazine. I did a few of these same columns for Instinct, and they were doing the end of the world issue for the millennium, so we did Armageddon. That's the only reason Armageddon is in the book, because it kind of tied into the millennium. But we tried to pick movies that were part of the zeitgeist of their times, like that people saw that made a difference for people that maybe weren't that great, like Flashdance. Everyone saw that and loved it. But as a movie, I love it, but it's not Citizen Kane. But movies that made people change the way they dress or that were sort of phenomenon. Or I also like to watch movies that were really controversial at the time they came out, like Cruising, and see what the fuss was all about.
The next day, Al embarks on his trip to Gayberry RFD. He's brought along a few carefully chosen props, like worn jeans and a leather jacket, which he unpacks from a black suitcase. Oh, you guys, I want to get a suitcase like that and start all over. I've been doing the gay thing all wrong.
There should be a scene where, like, Q gives him his special gay gadgets.
This is the Funny Girl original cast album. Please return it intact, 007. And I expect those anal beads to be returned sterilized and still on the string.
Before long, Al meets his affable neighbor, Ted Bailey, an aspiring playwright whose dancer boyfriend is out of town. The neighbors hit it off instantly and are soon dashing out together for a bite to eat.
Boys, you would know better than I, but aren't there a lot of carbohydrates on that table for supposedly gay people? Where are the low-cal scrambled egg whites only, broiled chicken, no cheese omelets? I'm thinking there wasn't one gay consultant on this film.
Speaking of food, I noticed somebody's little Tupperware thingy in the kitchen. Are we getting another treat?
Oh, I nearly forgot.
Marcus runs into the kitchen and returns with his trusty cupcake taker.
I give you my Cruising cream-filled butt cakes. You bake them like normal cupcakes, then a minute before they're ready, you split the tops and shoot the holes full of vanilla frosting. Hoo-ha!
Hensley is also a singer-songwriter whose debut CD was nominated for a Glamma Award.
I would give my last dime if I could.
Dennis Hensley's CD is called The Water's Fine.
That's what it's called. Yep.
No follow-up yet?
No, I want to. It's hard. That stuff was hard to... That was really hard to make happen.
The co-writer, co-director, and co-star of the 13-minute film fest fave, Evie Harris, shining star, Hensley has since moved on to writing feature films.
I co-wrote a screenplay with David Morton, who directed Edge of 17, and it's called Testosterone, based on the novel by James Robert Baker, and we just shot it in Argentina. I think he was down there like 8 weeks. I was down there like 3 for part of the shoot. It's about this guy whose boyfriend dumps him without even saying goodbye, so he chases him to Argentina to try to find closure, to try to find out why, and he goes a little nuts, and a lot of crazy stuff happens to him, and it's really dark and funny. I don't think we're going to be getting any humanitarian awards for it, but I think it's hilarious and sexy and interesting, I hope. And it's being edited now, and it stars David Sutcliffe, who is on the Gilmore Girls, very hottie, and Sonia Braga, Jennifer Coolidge, and Antonio Sabato Jr. in a role that will surprise you. And every sexy Argentinian man and woman is in this movie. It was fun to be down there because there were a few parts where we needed to come up with a few lines on the spot or come up with something for this, you know, just things that happen on the day. And it was fun to come up with an idea and just watch the actor say it like 20 minutes later. And it's being put down on film.
Although Dennis Hensley is successful, he isn't a household name. But that's okay with him.
It's nuts how fast fame comes and goes. I don't envy people that are in that position of like, you know, I'm having my moment. How do I make it last? How do I make the most of it? How do I keep it going? It's nuts. And it gets faster and faster. I think in the music industry especially, there are sort of those people that had that record and then they're over at 22. Look at O-Town, those poor boys. Oh, I just want to hold them and make them feel like it's okay.
For more information on Dennis Hensley, drop by his website at DennisHensley.com. Screening Party is from Allison Publications, and the audiobook version is from Fluid Words. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
There are hills and bluffs and boulevards that I never thought to try. But they don't look so impossible.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Alzinga, Graham Underhill, Fensberry, Rex Walkner, Catherine Kimball, Brian Goble, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to KUNM Albuquerque's Paul Ingalls and Nick Lehman, and to Paul Jaffe. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 5VU Adelaide, South Australia, KOPN Columbia, Missouri, Trans FM Broward County, Florida, and more than 135 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.